Broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. We have breaking news for you, of course. It'll be very interesting to find out that the Washington Post, of all sources, is using interesting people to attack the Bundys. They are using FBI confidential informants. And we're going to get into that in just a few minutes. We have Lori Anderson on the line. She's going to be introducing to you an update from Brian Hyde on the ground about the trials. Go ahead, Lori.
Well, hello, everyone. How are you doing tonight, Tom?
I'm blessed. You take it away and tell us what Mr. Hyde has had to say.
Absolutely, absolutely. So for you individuals who do not know, Mr. Brian Hyde, he is the spokesman for the Bundy family, and his latest update is about a hearing that was at the Las Vegas Federal Courthouse. Judge Gloria Navarro held a hearing on December 27, 2017. And in this hearing, it is being reported that four motions that were filed by Ryan Payne's attorneys were unsealed. And I'll let him tell you the rest of that story. Mike, if you would, please play that clip.
Hi, this is Brian Hyde for Who's Next, and we've had a nice little break from all the courtroom action ever since the judge declared a mistrial last week, but some more information has come to light. As of yesterday, Wednesday, a number of previously sealed motions were unsealed, and this has shed some pretty serious light on what the prosecution has been calling missteps. I should put that in quotation marks, but actually looks a lot like misconduct. And I'll explain what I mean by that. Four motions were unsealed yesterday. Three of those were motions. These were all motions filed, by the way, by Ryan Payne's attorneys, who I have to give some recognition to Ms. Wexler and Mr. Norwood. They have been absolutely exemplary in their defense of Ryan Payne and of course helping with the other defendants, and they have really done their part as federal public defenders, and they have held the prosecution's feet to the fire. In this case, they had filed motions. Three of them were motions to dismiss based on either withholding of evidence or failure to comply with the release of that evidence in a timely fashion. One was a reply to a government response to a previous motion to dismiss. But what we're getting out of these motions and what was coming forward is there was specific information that the prosecution had ridiculed and actually downplayed the defense. Oh, you guys, you're off on this fishing expedition. You're just looking for these fantastical things. You're trying to delay. I think they used the word self-serving more than once to describe the information being requested by the defense. And yet now we're starting to see.
All All right. So while we're waiting for the technical difficulties to get ironed out, I want to read this really quick to you. 18 U.S. Code 1621. Why is that relevant, Tom? That is the U.S. Code for perjury. I just want to put that out there. The U.S. Code for perjury says, whoever, having taken an oath before a competent tribunal, officer, or person, in any case in which a law of the United States authorizes an oath to be administered, that he will testify, declare, depose, or certify truly, or that any written testimony, declaration, disposition, deposition, or certificate by him subscribed is true, willfully and contrary to such oath states or subscribes any material matter which he does not believe to be true, or in any declaration, certificate, verification, or statement under penalty of perjury as permitted under Section 1746 of Title 28 U.S. Code, willfully subscribes as true any material matter which he does not believe to be true, is guilty of perjury and shall, except as otherwise expressly provided by law, be fined under this title or in prison not more than 5 years or both. This section is applicable whether the statement or subscription is made within or without the United States. Now, why did I just read that? I just read that because it is coming out that the prosecution willfully and had in not only the intent, they knew that they were covering up that information. They were hiding that information, the exculpatory evidence, because they sure didn't want it to, they sure didn't want it to look bad that the government actually had snipers there before the protesters ever showed up. They sure didn't want it to look like they were militarized before the protesters showed up. They didn't want the public to know that for months before the protesters showed up, they had been surveilling the Bundys unlawfully without a warrant. They didn't want it to be known that they had tapped the phones and recorded the phone calls unlawfully without a warrant of some of the extended Bundy members. They did not want it to be known that they destroyed pipelines in which was not even in that quote-unquote order of, by the judge. They did not want it known that they slaughtered at least 100 cattle, if I am not mistaken, and buried them in mass graves. Well, they didn't want the public to know about that First Amendment zone, and they surely didn't want the people to know about the connections with Uranium One.
And Lori,
of the fictitious things that went along with it. Yes, Tom.
Lori, I know a lot of people have seen images from those cattle graves. The day that was being unearthed, Ryan Bundy was in a backhoe. We pulled in, and I actually got down in that grave, in that hole that we discovered out in the middle of the desert there. A lot of those images were taken by us and released before any mainstream media even reported on it. It took them quite a long time to even delve into that. Which is why I think alternative media now and citizen journalism is coming under fire from these Washington Post and Newsweek sources that we're going to be getting into. I just wanted to add that.
Amazing. Mike, do we have the technical difficulties? Yes, that'll be fine. We're going to try to finish one more time to finish playing this clip.
Interesting, all the technical difficulties we're having all of a sudden.
Oh, yes, isn't it? Okay, Mike, please play the clip.
To the defendants being able to explain why they were in Bunkerville, what it was that brought them there, and most importantly, it showed that there were things that the prosecution had stated as fact or stated with certainty that turned out to be completely false. So I'm just going to run very quickly through the list here. If you're just catching up on this, last week Judge Gloria Navarro declared a mistrial. She cited at least six different Brady violations. A Brady violation refers to evidence that was either inadvertently or willfully withheld that could have been favorable or exculpatory to the defense. In this case, every violation Judge Navarro highlighted, she made a point of saying it was, in her opinion, willfully suppressed. That's pretty strong words, because I've had a couple of friends who are in law enforcement tell me one single Brady violation on their part as a police officer would bar them from ever working as a cop again. So take that for what it's worth. So far, the prosecution has not shown real willingness to take responsibility for its actions. Again, it's minimized it as, well, this is a misstep, or the evidence that's coming out is just, it's a delaying tactic. But instead, it's very crucial. Prosecutors failed to abide by deadlines that they were given to provide this evidence to the defendants. They ridiculed, they disparaged the defense, they brazenly said evidence didn't exist when it clearly did, as we found out when their witnesses got on the stand, and Mary Rugwell was one of the agents who inadvertently brought up things like, for instance, the threat assessments that the defense had requested as far back as July that showed that at least four different threat assessments had been done on the Bundy family to determine how big of a threat do they actually pose to those officers who would go out there to impound their cattle. Every one of those threat assessments came back showing that they were the lowest possible threat, meaning there was almost no possibility of violence. I think one of the guys had said something along the lines of, if you back Cliven into a corner, you might get punched in the nose. But nothing that would justify sending a 200-man militarized task force to go there and brutally and aggressively point guns at people, beat people down, arrest Dave Bundy, and so forth. It was a greatly exaggerated threat on the part of the government, and what's astonishing is one of their own witnesses who had been prepared, she had been prepped by the FBI before she ever got on the stand, referenced those assessments, and then the prosecution had to admit, yeah, they actually did exist, and slowly they came forward. There was a discovery monitor that was asked to be appointed by the defense, someone who would actually ensure that the prosecution was properly giving that information to the defense and meeting those deadlines. No monitor was appointed. There was a whistleblower document that came out at the end of November, an investigator for the BLM complained that there was a what looked like a quest for vengeance more so than a quest for justice taking place. And when he complained about it and tried to take it to the U.S. Attorney's Office, his complaints fell on deaf ears. And so because of this, the defendants, and particularly Payne's attorneys, are now saying the current team of U.S. Attorney Stephen Myrie and Mr. Sheets should not be allowed to continue prosecuting. If they're going to move forward with this case, which hopefully they won't, hopefully this is, I mean, I don't know how much lower the bar would have to be for them to say just outright, this needs to be dismissed, but that's really what needs to happen. And these attorneys need to be held accountable. It should disqualify them from any further work on the case. I know it sounds a lot like things have been flipped on their head. You know, who's on trial here after all? Is it the government that's on trial? In a very real sense, the answer is yes. And you have to understand that what the government wields is a tremendous amount of power and a tremendous amount of authority over life, death, property, freedom, and imprisonment. And in this case, we have a number of defendants who have been socked away in jail, treated as prisoners, subjected to the same protocols that convicted prisoners are subjected to for nearly 2 years. And we're learning that everything in the government's case that portrayed them as a dangerous, violent threat to society is not holding up to closer scrutiny. And worse, evidence which could have proven that months ago and spared them all that time in jail was withheld. I don't know. My moral compass, I try to keep it calibrated. I'm sure you try to keep yours calibrated as well. But there's just, I can't see how a thinking person would let something like that pass the sniff test. So there will be more big decisions on the part of the judge coming up on January 8th. Actually, tomorrow, Friday, is when both the defense and the prosecution are supposed to have their arguments in order as to what the judge should do. Should she call this a mistrial with prejudice, dismiss the case, and be done with it?
And of course, she
proceed with a new trial starting at the end of February? I know where I would come down on that question, and you probably have your ideas as well, but we will be watching very closely to see what happens.
Thank you very much for that, Mike.
And we urge you, of course, to help us get the...
Thank you. Of course, she did call it a mistrial. That was a wonderful update from Mr. Hyde. He's been doing outstanding professional work, along with John Lamb and many other people, Vincent Easley. You know, citizen journalism is replacing the media in its accuracy. I wish that we had the same kind of support financially, even a fraction of what these mainstream news outlets had, so that we could spread the truth. One of the things that I'm compiling is all of the absolute blatant lies about the $1 million in fees that these mainstream articles keep consistently posting, even though the information has now been released that is nowhere near that. I think it was $8,900 and some dollars, something to that effect. Certainly not the million in grazing fees that they were alleging. And this is, it is public defamation. I'm compiling every single article that I read that comes across these lies, and that's just one of them, are being saved, and I'm sending notice one at a time to each one of these publications to cease and desist, and that is that acts as notice that they have been giving misinformation. I'm not giving them links to the proper information. They can do their due diligence on their own. But let's get to the meat of the story that I was bringing out here. I've spoken previously about a confidential informant, and one of the reasons I can so openly talk about this without worry, as a disclaimer to the network, this is the Resurrect the Republic show, and I am responsible for all content on this show. That being said, this individual in question has already publicly, to at least two people that I know of, and one that I trust very much so, and I'm sure would come forward, has admitted to this. At least one of the acts involved. She wouldn't go any further into the further acts that she was involved in colluding with the FBI. There's a couple levels to this, folks, that I need you to understand. First, the root faith of the Bundys is under attack in the mainstream media. Both Newsweek and, most importantly right now, and what we're focusing on is the Washington Post article, which will be, links to that article will be in the description of this podcast, and I will get it up on RBN as quickly as I am able to. I'm still at a little bit of a disadvantage. But let's get into the meat of this article. First, it's the title of it is Clive and Bundy's Fight Against the Feds Has Roots in the Interpretation of Mormon Scripture. And this is how they smear. This is not accurate. What it is Clive and Bundy's fight against the agencies involved here has roots in the interpretation of the Constitution, which Mormon scripture has repeatedly affirmed is the, get this, everybody hold on to their seats, the supreme law of the land.
No.
Oh, my goodness.
Oh,
yes.
Say.
I do.
Oh,
I
my
do.
Goodness. Oh, my
yes,
goodness.
Yes, I do.
And I don't know what we're going to do with that, Tom.
I'm not LDS, but this layer to this interest, and I think this is very interesting because there are there's this individual who has already been outed as a confidential FBI informant, like I explained to you guys. Hold on a second. I'm getting to that page right now. Yes, we can take a break. We'll meet you back on the other side with this FBI confidential informant in the Washington Post.
Do you or someone you know suffer from chest pain, blood pressure, cholesterol, or irregular heartbeat? Are you looking for a more natural solution to overcome these health challenges? You hear the ads all the time. If this stuff's so good, why doesn't my doctor prescribe it? That's easy. Doctors are not trained in natural medicine. Extendivite Heart Tonic does want you to be as healthy as you can be. and it really works. Take Extendivite for 6 months and your doctor will say, I don't know what you're doing, but don't stop. It's working for you. Get the dependability of Extendivite. Just see how you feel in 6 months. A 2 month supply of either capsules or liquid is only $69.95 plus shipping and handling. Call 1-877-928-8822. That's 1-877-928-8822 or visit heartdrop.com.
Extend your life with Extendovite.
Folks, we're living in a world the likes of which we've never perceived any clearer than we do now. The plan for global governance has been in the works for generations and would have likely been achieved by now, but for the fact that the globalists left open their Achilles heel. With all their tools, Federal Reserve System, fiat currency, No Child Left Behind, and then Common Core education introduced to our schools to dumb us down, vaccines, pharmaceuticals to lobotomize us, GMO foods, insertion of compromised or bought and paid for politicians, judges, mainstream media propaganda, all pieced together like a puzzle designed to ultimately bring the world under submission. But with all their strategy, they forgot one thing, knowledge. And knowledge is power. With knowledge, their bombardment is nullified. Folks, with that, as brilliant and knowledgeable as you've become, among the wisest audience of any radio audience in the world, and you are, I want you to take a moment to reflect and ask yourself, how much of that knowledge did I obtain from Republic Broadcasting Network? How high has my consciousness been raised since I've been a listener? How fast am I now able to discriminate truth from fake news by being a Republic Broadcasting listener? How clear am I now able to see the world since I've been listening to RBN? Ask yourselves those questions, folks. Then ask yourself, what is that knowledge worth to me? Like my morning coffee, how would I survive without it? A voice of truth in a sea of lies. Do we not all need to make sure it survives? Like public broadcasting, we are now finding we can only survive with listener support. Censorship, advertisers being attacked, truth itself being attacked. It's the only way through this. We at Republic Broadcasting humbly ask you to become a supporter. Look at your budget and make a determination of what Republic Broadcasting is worth to you and what you can afford on a monthly basis. Go to republicbroadcasting.org and pledge 20, 30, 40, 50, if possible, 100 a month or more if it's affordable. Click the donate button and become a regular monthly donor. Assure both us and yourself that Republic Broadcasting truth will continue to flow like that morning coffee. The network thanks you.
Mother of the moon, which filled my sails, close the sea of years.
Welcome back, Resurrected Republic Truth Radio Broadcast on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Okay, now what we were talking about is a Washington Post article that I have here. Clive and Bundy's fight against the feds has roots interpretation of Mormon scripture. Of course, we've already addressed that. It's roots interpretation or in constitution, which, by the way, the church, God forbid that any church stands up specifically for the constitution. Well, then not only is the church smeared as a Southern Poverty Law Center hate group, but so is the constitution, which is really what they're after, after all. However, we'll get to that in a moment. It says here, now, Melissa, her name is Melissa Lofter, was a former Bundy supporter, and she claims to be a part of the official Mormon Church. She's speaking on behalf of, according to her, the official Mormon Church. She was at the Bundy Ranch, and she was in Oregon right alongside Ryan and Ammon. She is also listed, now that I can say this because she's outed herself, she is listed in my discovery as a confidential FBI informant. I have taken that and I have posted that not only to the website, I posted it to Twitter, and it will be on RBN's Facebook as well as mine after the show. So this is what she goes on to say. And this is, keep in mind, this is Washington Post now, this irrelevant little hack who has been down on the ground getting in people's faces and acting. She was thrown out of the court. She's creating division, dissension. She attacks a book that was co-written by Clive and Bundy called The Nay Book, which she says is, oh, I'll just read this to you. Melissa Lofter, former Bundy supporter who is a Mormon, criticized The Nay Book, which was written by Clive and Bundy and a neighbor, named after his neighbor that passed away, as an adulteration of her religion. She thinks it would be used to manipulate people toward the Bundy cause. This is how incorrect teachings spread, she said. It becomes a cancer to society, she said, and it becomes a cancer to all of us. She says the Nay book has been distributed among Bundy supporters, and she considers it the Bundy family's manifesto. This booklet also includes writings from Ezra Taft Benson, who served as Agriculture Secretary during the Eisenhower administration from 53 to 61, and later as president of the LDS Church. I thought it wasn't official. But anyway, Benson also has strong ties to John Birch, and of course, you know, they call them anti-government. According to the, get this, big surprise, Southern Poverty Law Center. So we find this interesting individual not only aligning herself with the likes of the Southern Poverty Law Center's views on Bundy and the Center of Biological Diversity's views on Bundy, but also J.J. McNabb, who was a one-time hit artist for Forbes magazines, that's what she keeps touting, and has been virulent against the Bundys. So now, you have to understand here that the concept of the Bundy's interpretation of jurisdiction here is what jurors who came out and spoke. I was listening to another clip. No, we don't have ready for you, but we'll share it with you maybe next time. But the jurors who did come out and spoke with the Bundys after this mistrial was declared, the majority of them pretty much said that they were going to be found not guilty anyway. And that I found very interesting because they were kept from most of the information that was exculpatory. So the government's case was shot in the foot without the evidence that was illegally, Brady violations, Giglio violations, withheld. So this article, you know, what bothers me about this, folks, is that we already know, and we played this on this show several times, the CIA hearings in front of Congress on the Operation Mockingbird, CIA influence of the news, government packaged news, and now they're using FBI informants who are known now to be confidential informants for the FBI who offered testimony against people, including me, to use as the body of their article, along with the Southern Poverty Law Center. I wonder how the church would feel about this individual aligning herself with the likes of the Southern Poverty Law Center. I mean, that to me is grossly negligent. It certainly isn't news. It's fake news. When they have to use individuals like this, I don't even know how they dug her up, but they managed to do so. So anyway, now we have, let's see here. Let's see. You know what? There's a clip that I sent about government representatives and the BLM. We're going to share that with you after we come back after this next break. So swallow all that. FBI informants now in the mainstream press blasting the Bundys. I guess that's what they're reduced to.
Well, yeah, because they can't get anybody else to do it because everybody else pretty much knows the facts.
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, it's pretty sad when you have Jeff Sessions calling for an investigation into the prosecution. Just saying.
Yep. All right, we'll be back after a few words from our sponsors, folks. Resurrect the Republic, RTR. Reload.
The smoke is rising in the shadows overhead.
You are tuned in to the Republic Broadcasting Network. Visit our website by going to republicbroadcasting.org.
Hi, folks. CBD is the home run hitter for health right now. Why, you ask? Because of what it does for the body. Unfortunately, I can't tell you all about the benefit. You know, there's reasons. Do your due diligence and log on to ancientlifeoil.com. That's ancientlifeoil.com. Ancient Life Oil uses organic ingredients and is blended in coconut oil. for some of the best benefits. Legal in 50 states and non-psychoactive. Log on to AncientLifeOil.com. That's AncientLifeOil.com.
Do you worry a lot? Whether you're a college student, busy professional, parent, or grandparent, ongoing stress and elevated levels of the stress hormone cortisol can rob your memory, your health, and your future. Now you can combat the effects of stress and anxiety while improving your memory and recall at the same time with the dietary supplement Calm and Clever. Studies show that the ingredients in Calm and Clever reduce cortisol by as much as 30% in 1 to 2 weeks. Call 1-800-758-8746 or calmandclever.com.
Without the right accessories, any guy can be off the mark. Whether you've invested thousands in your arsenal or you own a single trusted firearm, a visit to AROutfitting.com is in order. It's one of the finest online selections of tactical optics and AR parts and add-ons, like EOTech, quick target acquisition with no peripheral loss. Browse the full range of Nikon scopes and binoculars. AROutfitting.com can illuminate your world with Streamlight gun-mounted lights from keychain to large handhelds, up to 1,100 lumens. Find some stability with Battenfield tactical bipods. AirOutfitting.com has CMMG gun parts, barrels, assemblies, handguards, part kits, and more. Plus Magful clips and magazines. I know I've got you excited, so take a breath. Head to AirOutfitting.com. The site's super easy to navigate and features a ton of technical info, including links to manuals. We also welcome vendor and manufacturer inquiries. Remember, if you don't see it, we can get it at AirOutfitting.com.
Ladies and gentlemen, J.R. Moore here. As most of you know, my regular listeners, I offer energy cleaners for sale at my website. If you don't have a clue what I'm talking about, go to my website, thelibertyman.com, educate yourself about these marvelous healing devices. We focus on pain mitigation and getting a great night's sleep. Arthritis pain, joint pain, back pain, doesn't matter. Keep in mind, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guaranteed. That's what I do. Energy cleaners, $285, shipping included to American zip codes. You can educate yourself all about the energy cleaner right there at my website, the patent application, the wonderful testimonials. Be sure and check out the factory-made fitted mattress pads to go with the energy cleaner. Now, I offer for me to you personally a 30-day money-back guarantee. That's what I do. I have a toll-free order line, or you can order it right at my website at thelibertyman.com. The toll-free order line is 800-592-9543. I say again, 800-592-9543. Thank you.
Ain't no denying, ain't no denying.
Resurrect the Republic. Truth Radio Broadcast, RTR Reloaded on the Republic Broadcasting Network. Okay, so in a second, we're going to go to a clip that backs up what will be my position in this, right? Okay. Mormon religion used to justify extreme anti-government ideology in Bundy case. This is from Newsweek. Now, if you take the titles of this Newsweek and Washington Post, they're very, very similar, just reworded. And then it goes on to say how an obscure Mormon religious text, coming from, of course, being promoted by M.D. Lofter, pushing it out into the mainstream, knowing that she's probably got some federal assistance there, central tenets influencing, get this again, the anti-government ideology, anti-government, pro-constitutional republic, pro-constitution somehow equates to being anti-government, and, oh, there it is, the Southern Poverty Law Center, smeared in here too. Now, but they go on to say that Bundy refuses to recognize federal authority over his land. It's a jurisdictional issue, and the argument is over the use of grazing rights, not privileges, and he owes the government around, here we go again, $1.2 million. Well, we are live, and I will say to Newsweek and to the Washington Post, you are both on notice for absolutely printing bald-faced lies. I really hope when I hand all of this information over to the Bundy's attorneys, they take action against you. You have been put on notice, and I have sent emails to the writers and to the publications. Now, the next one I want to get to really quick is, of all places, The Hill, which I have been told the opinion of some of the folks back there on our staff, that sometimes they have some good articles, and then all of a sudden they come out of left field with this. Get this. You know, due process, remember, folks? Bundy mistrial highlights federal failures to bring criminals to justice. I thought they were found not guilty in Oregon, and they haven't been found guilty yet in a court of law here. They have them here as already being millions of dollars of damage. Let's see. What other of course, they call them a crackpot and all that interesting stuff. This comes from The Hill, which did surprise me just a little bit. Really? Okay, so let me refute with this anti-government movement that I'm allegedly a part of, right? I am going to not turn it over to my own opinion. I am going to let somebody, and far be it for me to use somebody from outside Oregon, an Oregon representative, Walden, please roll that clip.
There is certainly a very strong presence of intimidation by the federal government here, to the point that even elected representatives have been intimidated to speak out. And that's kind of just the beginning of it.
It was a mighty nation, blessed above all of creation.
It was a murder. Mr. Speaker, as I'm sure my colleagues are aware of the situation in Harney County, Oregon, where a group of protesters armed have overtaken a federal facility, the National Wildlife Refuge. This group is led largely by people who are not necessarily from Oregon, although they obviously have supporters from Oregon. They are originally there to protest the sentencing of Dwight and Steve Hammond. I know the Hammonds. I've known them for probably close to 20 years. They're longtime responsible ranchers in Harney County. They have been sentenced to prison, not once, but now twice, and I'll get into that in a moment. The point I want to make at the outset here is for people in this chamber to understand what drives people to do what's happening tonight in Harney County. I've had the great honor and privilege to represent Harney County for a number of years. I have seen the impact of federal policies from the Clinton administration to the Obama administration. I have seen what happens when overzealous bureaucrats and agencies go beyond the law and clamp down on people. I have seen what courts have done. And I have seen the time for Congress to act, and then it has not. I want to put this in perspective because I think it's really important to understand how big this region is. My congressional district in Oregon is something like the seventh or eighth biggest in the Congress by size. If you overlaid it over the East Coast, it would start in the Atlantic and end in Ohio. The county where this occupation is taking place, Harney County, is over 10,000 square miles, and there are 7,000 souls inhabiting it. If my math is right, that's one person for every 1.4 miles. One person for every 1.4 miles. It's 10 times the size of Rhode Island, just this one county. It's larger than the state of Maryland. And 72% of it is under the command and control of the federal government. It is the public's land. That is true. But what people don't understand is the culture, the lifestyle of this great American West. And how much these ranchers care about the environment, about the future, about their children, about America. And how much they believe in the Constitution. And now we see the extent they will go to defend what they view as their constitutional rights. Now, I am not defending armed takeovers. I do not think that's appropriate. And I think the time has come for those to consider that they've made their case in the public about what is happening in the West, and perhaps it's time for them to realize they've made their case and to go home. But I want to talk about what happened with the Hammonds. And I want to put in perspective of what happens almost every year, and that is these enormous wildfires. The Miller Homestead wildfire in 2012 burned 160,000 acres, mostly in this county, if not all, 250 square miles, quarter the size of the state of Rhode Island. That was just in 2012. The Berry Point fire that year in Lake County next door burned 93,000 acres. Last summer,
seeing a pattern here with these fires.
Alone, we burned 799,974 acres across Oregon. That's both forest and high desert. 2012, 3.4 million acres burned in Oregon. There was another fire in Malheur County, the Long Draw Fire in 2012, burned 557,000 acres, five times the size of Rhode Island. So 93,000 acres, 557,000 acres, 160,000 acres, all burning. The Hammonds are in prison tonight for setting a backfire that they admit to that burned 139 acres. And they will sit in prison, time served, and time going forward, 5 years. Under a law that I would argue is never intended to mete out that kind of punishment. And I'll get that to a moment. I've told you I worked with the Hammonds and many ranchers in Harney County. In the last years of the Clinton administration, despite their own agencies' reviews and analysis, Bill Clinton threatened to create a giant monument on Steens Mountain. When Secretary Babbitt, Interior Secretary at the time, came before the House Resources Committee, of which I was a member, I said, Mr. Secretary, your own resource advisory committees in the area just reported that there was no need for additional protection on Steens Mountain, and yet you and the president are threatening this national monument. Why do you waste the time of the citizens to go through a process to determine if additional protections are needed and then ignore what they came up with? To Bruce Babbitt's credit, he agreed when I told him, I think you'd be surprised about what the local ranchers and citizens of Harney County would be willing to do if you gave them a chance. To his credit, he said, all right, I will give them that chance. And he did. We went to work on legislation. It took a full year. I worked with the Hammonds. I worked with Stacey Davies. I worked with all kinds of folks. Put a staffer on it full time, multiple staffs. And we worked with the environmental community and others. And we created the Steens Mountain Cooperative Management and Protection Act. Model legislation, never been done before, because I said, we don't have to live by past laws, we write laws. So we wrote a new law to create a cooperative spirit of management in Harney County. Hammonds were part of that discussion. They say, we saved a running camp that Harlan Wyarty runs. We protected inholder. We tried to do all the right things and create the kind of partnership and cooperation that the federal government and the citizens should have. Let me fast forward on that particular law. Not long after that became law, and it was heralded as this monumental law of great significance and new era and cooperation and spirit of cooperation, some of those involved on the other side and some of the agencies decided to reinterpret it. The first thing they tried to do is shut down this kids' running camp because they said, well, too many, maybe more than 20, run down this canyon back up, as they had for many, many years. So they wanted to shut it down. So we had to fight them back, said, no, the law says historical standards. Then the bureaucrats, because we said you should have your historical access to your property if you're up on Steens Mountain, you should maintain that access like you've always had it. Do you know what the bureaucrats said? They began to solicit from the inholders in this area, how many times did you go up there last year? You see, they wanted to put a noose around the neck of those who were inside. That was a total violation of what we intended. And we had to back them off. See, the bureaucracy wants to interpret the laws we write in ways they want. And in this case, they were wrong. Not once, but twice. And then a couple years ago, I learned that despite the fact we created the first cow-free wilderness in the United States under this law, and said clearly in this law that it would be the responsibility of the government to put up fencing to keep the cows out as part of the agreement. The Bureau of Land Management said, no, we're not going to follow that law. And they told a rancher they had to build a fence. I networked with my Democrat colleague, Mr. DeFazio from Oregon, who was part of writing this law. I said, Peter, you remember that, right? He said, yeah, I didn't like it, but that was the case. BLM still wouldn't listen. So we continued to push it. And they argued back. Well, it turns out there had been a second rancher who brought this to my attention, who they were telling had to do the same thing, build the fence, when the government was supposed to, under the law I wrote. The agency, the arrogance of the agency, was such that they said, we don't agree with you. Now, there aren't many times, Mr. Speaker, in this job when you can say, I know what the intent of a law was. But in this case, I could because I wrote the law. I knew the intent. Oh, that wasn't good enough. No. The arrogance of these agency people was such that we had to go to the archives and drag out the boxes from 2000, when we wrote this law, from the hearings that had all the records for the hearings and the floor discussion, to talk about the intent. And our retired member, George Miller, actually, we used some of his information where he said the government would provide the fencing. They were still reluctant to follow it. So I put language in the appropriations bill that restated the federal law. Do you understand how frustrated I am at this? Can you imagine how the people on the ground feel? Can you imagine?
Can you imagine?
If you're not there, you can't. If you're not there, you can't. You ridicule them. Yeah, Portland, Oregonians running a thing. What do you send them, meals for militia? Let's have fun with this. This is not a laughing matter from any consequence. Nobody's going to win out of this.
Thank you, Mike. Thank you. I think this that the point is made here very well. What do you do when the agencies themselves become unlawful and defy the law that legislators put into effect? When the law itself becomes unlawful, that is the definition of tyranny. Our founders were very clear about how to handle tyranny. When the law itself becomes unlawful, we have a right, a duty, to throw off such agencies until such time as they abide by the law. This is what they call anti-government. This is what they seriously call anti-government. And they're allowed to get away with this propagation of lies. Now, I just tweeted out an article from Freedom Outpost, from Tim Brown. I will publicly state one more time for these mainstream outlets what the alleged fees and charges are. First of all, for the trespass fees is $8,815.50 with a $10 service charge. Then, of course, they tacked on for administrative fees for investigation, detective, resolution of trespass, and total monetary charges due to their operations and over the course of time, $283,776. We're still not even close to $1 million. But this has been the seed that has been planted in the public mindset. This is the seed that has grown now from the center of biological diversity, that Soros-funded bunch of enviro-terrorists, legal terrorists, who sued the federal government into actually moving on the Bundys to begin with. This is, and they say that some of these patriot groups out there simulate legal processes. Oh, talk about subversion from within. These people have absolutely no moral compass. All right, we have a caller on the line I want to get to. Mike in Kentucky. He's been working with this for 20 years. Mike, you're on RBN, Resurrect the Republic. Go ahead.
Well, I ended up making myself a target because I was asked to do a video production for a group called Take Back Kentucky, which included cattlemen and a conservative Democrat from the western side of Louisville. And they had ran smack up with some of this guy's constituents. I'm trying to remember his name right now, but it's not really important at the moment. Perry Clark. He had ran into constituents that were like, what the heck's going on? I bought this property, and now they're putting all these restrictions on it. They say it's part of a biosphere or part of an American Heritage Rivers Initiative or all this stuff. Clinton signed this biodiversity treaty. It calls for, specifically, if you're looking for proof or intent, that thing calls for the world's population to be reduced to 1 billion people. And so George Soros and this crowd of environmental extremists know this sort of stuff, and that's why they're suing the government. But, I mean, what do you think? Do you think treaties are valid if they are not in congruence with the Constitution? I don't think so.
Oh, please allow me to quote from one of my favorite cases. That would be Marbury v. Madison. Anything repugnant to the Constitution is null and void. Now, I understand that treaties are part of the supreme law of the land once they're signed, but that's only if the treaty doesn't violate the tenets of said Constitution.
Well, there's a bunch of law school idiots, educated idiots, that think the opposite.
Mostly communists.
Well, unfortunately, a lot of them end up in some pretty higher-up positions of power because they were appointed by the likes of the Clintonistas and the Obamas. So we've got like 16 years of that mentality in the court systems. And
subversion.
If you Google for it, I produced for Gatewood Galbraith, if you know who he is, he was the advocate for industrial hemp and ran for governor a couple of times in Kentucky. He was like involved with Woody Harrelson's effort to plant a pot seed in Kentucky, if you remember that. But anyway,
I do.
I think it's called UN Man in the Biosphere Gatewood Davis. And that was an attempt to produce, back in the days of videotape in the late 90s, we tried to produce it's like almost an hour, 50 minutes. And it goes through some of this stuff about the UN Man in the Biosphere sustainability and how they wanted to create these buffer zones and expand them around the biospheres. I jumped on and tried to help them. I mean, they were going to pay me whether I agreed with them or not. But I'd already seen the UN biosphere at the Smoky Mountains and wondered what the heck that is, you know, and done my own little research. I didn't even know about this biodiversity treaty. But when I was asked to come help out this local TV station, all of a sudden the phones are like behaving weirdly. And
I was chatting with you about that. I find that very interesting.
Well, and I had a private detective who wouldn't believe me for years and kept trying to say, oh, it's two-way radios and all this crap. FCC, when you complain to them, they say, oh, it's Part 15. Your phone has to accept radio interference. But there's no way a cordless phone or cell phone from South Carolina can interfere with a phone line in Kentucky unless it's part of this surveillance network, because these phones would be off, totally off, or the user thought they were off, and yet the audio from their room or their house, or in one case, this Hispanic, kind of funny, real quick story, this Hispanic guy is out behind a restaurant in, I think, Charleston, South Carolina, and he's talking in Spanish with some of his coworkers, mixed with English, and they're having a smoke break out by the dumpster. And I listened in for a few minutes because the situation was such that I could not hang up on these phone calls, but I had two phone lines. So I could hit turn flash until I could get a dial tone and get *69, get the phone number. And then when I hung up, the dang audio would be stuck there, and the line was occupied for like 45 minutes often. So, but if I got the phone number, I could go over to my other phone line, call the phone number, and talk to him and tell him what all was happening. Well, this Hispanic guy, when he answered the phone, I said, hey, what's going on, man? Are you taking a smoke break? And He said, "Oh yeah, we got a break at the restaurant here." I was like, "Oh, what restaurant are you working at these days?" And he goes, "Who is this?" You know, because I kind of, you know, talked like I knew him. And I explained what happened. I said, "I'm calling from a TV station up here in Moorhead, and your phone just locked up our second line that is dedicated to fax machine. And I heard all your conversation for the last several minutes with you and your coworkers there having a smoke break." And all of a sudden he goes, "No comprende." He acted like he couldn't understand English. And I said, "Guy, I'm just trying to warn you, this cell phone that you've got is listening at any given time. If you're involved in any nefarious activity, the government knows it. Are you an illegal alien?" "No comprende." He just, you know, all of a sudden he acted like he didn't understand a thing I was saying in English. It was one of the funniest.
Yeah, that doesn't surprise me
like
at all.
Hundreds of those. One of the weird things, real quick, I posted literally hundreds, if not maybe 1,000 copies of a video called Bandwidth Bandits on NBC and ABC television affiliate folders all across this country. Some of them got deleted in the production folders for they do production for commercials. I went and reposted them. And not one reporter, nobody from any of these TV stations called me to say, "What the heck are you doing? Quit posting this crap." The next summer, the FBI prosecuted a 19-year-old for doing graffiti in those same folders. And I think very seriously they did not want me in court, because the discovery process in 2009 or 10 would have blown open everything Snowden was saying before he released the documents. Because to defend myself, I would have had a discovery process that would have made them sweat bullets. And I was too high profile to kill, just like you're kind of too high profile to kill. They have a real problem with people that are too well known to the public. There's several people that are in that situation.
Well,
I think Michael
that didn't stop him from whacking out Bill Cooper when he exposed that whole Osama bin Laden and the mainstream news media, and he said, "And this jerkwater reporter." After the CIA couldn't find this guy for all these years, this jerkwater reporter walks in there with his whole camera crew and gets an interview and said, "Something's going to happen in this country, if not in a couple weeks, very soon. And when that happens, don't you believe what they tell you, blah, blah, blah." And what happened? 9/11, Osama bin Laden, Bill Cooper was dead. Now, I don't agree with everything that Bill Cooper said, but man, he hit that bell. He rang that bell. And he ended up dead for it. So,
yeah, he had a bit of a hot temper. He had a hot temper, though.
All right, we're going into a break. We'll see you on the second hour. Resurrect the Republic Truth Radio broadcast on RBN.
Do you or a loved one suffer migraine headaches? Listen to what scientist Kurt Hendricks has to say.
35 million people in the United States suffer with debilitating migraines. If you or a loved one are one of them, you need to know about MigraLeaf. Hi, I'm Kurt Hendricks, the scientist that formulated and patented the MigraLeaf migraine formula. MigraLeaf is a non-prescription dietary supplement recommended by neurologists, pharmacists, and pediatricians to address nutritional deficiencies in both adults and children over 2 with migraines. Try MigraLeaf for 3 months and see the powerful difference it can make in your life, or get your money back, no questions asked. Go to MIG911.com or call 800-MIG-7354. You can change your life today.
So if you suffer from migraines, don't wait. Call 800-MIG-7354. That's 800-MIG-7354 or visit MIG911.com.
This is RBN, the Republic Broadcasting Network.